It's a privilege and an honor to be able to serve on this lectureship. I still can't come to terms with the fact that I'm here before you now. You know, you have your scholars and those who are so well-versed, and then you have someone like me who's still wet behind the ears. And I often imagine, or I think about those who have gone before myself, Gene West, all of the my professors. I wonder if they chuckle every once in a while and just, you know, just say, you know, that young man, he's got a lot to learn, you know. in a fashion, you know, we were sent from the school to go to our respective congregations, and I wonder if they did that with a chuckle as well, because many of the things that you'll, many of the ordeals and the things that you'll go through, you don't learn at school. And so they probably sent us out laughing a little bit as well. Being a young man, a young preacher, I realize I have so much to learn, and when I'm in this kind of setting, it kind of throws me a little bit. But what I'm going to try to do is, in the best way I know how, set forth some very general concepts that all should be able to understand. First, I'd like to say to this congregation that I can't tell you how much I've benefited from having come to the school and having worked with this congregation and worshiped here with the great elders and Minister Gene West, who I have deep respect and love for. And just all the things, many of the things that I'm going through now, I have to draw back and draw into a well of knowledge, and much of that knowledge comes from this particular place. The work that is going on here with this congregation and with the school is just tremendous, and you can't really realize that until you get out on your own and you're working, and you realize that you're not the only one, but many young men have gone through this school and come through this place, and they're doing the same work that you're doing, and so it's a tremendous thing, and I just want you to know that you are in my prayers, and I just hope, you know, that this congregation will continue to flourish and continue to be blessed as it has been. Return unto the Lord is, of course, one of the very common pleas of God throughout the Bible. I have to tell you this. Sometimes, and even as parents, we don't listen to our children. I don't need to say this about my son, Ethan. And I was, for some reason, I was sleeping on the couch. Me and my wife, we were doing fine at that time, wasn't it? I was sleeping on the couch, and Ethan decided he didn't want to sleep in his bed, so he wanted to sleep with Dad. So I said, all right, come on, you know, so we're snuggled on this little couch. It's small. But I'm one of the type of parents that I'm constantly wondering, is my son all right? Is he cold? Did the cover, you know, come up over his feet? Or did he, you know, so I'm tucking him in constantly. I can't sleep that well. And so he was sleeping with me, and I made sure the cover was on him. And so he says, Daddy, I'm hot. I said, oh, okay, you know, so I look over, and he's, you know, he's got the cover off of him. So a little bit later, you know, I kind of look over, and the cover's, you know, up over his feet. And so I put the cover him back up again, and so then I nod back off. And then he takes the cover off of him again, you know, and I look over, and he, you know, the cover's not on him again. So I guess, you know, I put it on, you know, maybe three or four times. So then he's a nice kid, too. He's really, you know, courteous. And so he says, he taps me, said, what, son? He says, Daddy, remember when I told you that I was hot? And I said, yeah. He said, well, I'm hot. And I said, oh, my goodness. You know, so now when he says something, I listen so much more carefully. In the same light, God has sustained our lives, and he does with every waking moment, every second of every day. And for some reason, it's hard, and it has been hard for all those who have come into existence to pay close attention to God and the things that he asks of us. Paying close attention. Return unto the Lord is a plea that first and foremost serves us. Because when we return unto the Lord, then we are benefited. We are profited by this thing. At this point in time in the book of Hosea, beginning with chapter 14, first we must note that it is a perpetual plea of God. Hosea is not the first prophet to speak to the people and ask them to return unto the Lord. But many prophets have done that very same thing. The first verse begins and says, O Israel, return unto the Lord thy God, for thou hast fallen by thine iniquity. Take with you words and turn to the Lord. Say unto him, take away all iniquity and receive us graciously. So will we render the calves of our lips. Return unto the Lord, for thou hast fallen by thine iniquity. Recently, I was impacted by a brief study that I did on God and how he dealt with nations in times past. God, having all power and having the ability to turn whatever situation into whatever he pleases, I thought, why did it take so long? Or why was the process so extended in Christ coming and dying for the world? As a matter of fact, at the beginning of this plan that was in the mind before the world, mind of God before the world began, God could have orchestrated this plan in a way that would have had Christ somewhere in the beginning shed his blood, and that blood would then go ahead and take care of all the sins of the world if he so chose to do it that way. The problem of sin, we find that sin separated man from God in Isaiah 59, 1 and 2. The problem of sin was one that took a very long time to fix. The problem of sin. And so here you have nations that have come into existence, and generations, centuries of time go by, and still Jesus Christ has not died for the sins of the world. The problem of sin was so serious. It separated us from God. God being who he was, the nature of God, that the nature of God, God is love. God is holy, all of these things. And so then our condition separates us from him. And so all of this time passes, and Jesus comes into the world, and he dies for the sins of the world. The children of Israel, they had disobeyed God on several different occasions and events. And God found it necessary to continue to plead and beg for them to return. And I noted that term necessary simply because this was a promise that he gave to Abraham that he said, of thee I will make a great nation. Genesis 12 and 3. And so, here we find these at this particular time. The people of God are still living and being sustained by that same very promise. The annihilation of this group of persons was not an option for God. It was necessary, meaning needed for continuing existence or functioning of something, essential, indispensable. This plan, this promise that God had made to Abraham. So we come to a point where the people of God, once again, they have gone aside of themselves, and God still begs and pleads for them to return unto the Lord. It was in the mind of God before the world began, according to the determinate counsel of God in Acts 2:23, that Jesus Christ would come into this world and that he would die. They were still alive because of this promise God gave to Abraham. They were still alive, and this promise would come to fruition. It does not say much about us and our condition. It does not say anything that we've been so holy or so righteous, and this is why we still exist. As a matter of fact, the people of God, they were told, when you come into new lands and houses and great wealth, remember that it was God that made this possible for you. Because God is who he is, our lives are sustained. Because of the promise that he made many, many years ago, our lives are sustained. God provided Abram, a snippet, I call it, of the gospel in Genesis 12 and 3. And Abram did not live to see this plan unfold. Yet, those of us living today, we understand and know and perceive the plan. And we understand that it has come to fruition. And we're living in that promise today. Return unto the Lord. So then, being able to look back and see this plan unfold, we now see and understand that there was a constraint placed upon God himself, by himself, that he would bring about many nations and they would be blessed through Jesus Christ. We can see that now. And so this particular nation, they went astray. They would err, and the prophets of God would beg for them to come back to him. In Exodus chapter 32, we find an interesting scenario where Moses is pleading with God on behalf of the people. And Moses here in Exodus 32, beginning with verses 9 and 14, we'll read. And the Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore let me alone, that my wrath may wax hot against them, and that I may consume them, and I will make of thee a great nation. And Moses besought the Lord his God and said, Lord, why doth thy wrath wax hot against thy people, which thou hast brought forth out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Wherefore should the Egyptians speak and say, for mischief did he bring them out, to slay them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from thy fierce wrath and repent of this evil against thy people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, thy servant, to whom thou swearest by thine own self and saidst unto them, I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have spoken of will I give unto your seed, and they shall inherit it forever. And the Lord repented of the evil which he thought to do unto his people. Now many would think, and I don't think this is the case, but that Moses actually changed the mind of God. But more so it was perhaps a test for Moses to see, where is Moses at? I'll make of thee a great nation. Moses said, well, this isn't possible. You can't do this. And if you don't bring these people in, these other nations will say you weren't able to do it. Well, Moses is addressing God as a pledger without the option of renegotiating a pledge. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, thy servants to whom thou swearest by thine own self. Basically, the annihilation of this group was not an option because of the promise that he made to Abraham. To make a great nation of Moses was not an option. I think the Lord was pleased with Moses and his dialogue. Although the plea is perpetual, a perpetual plea to the nation of God, remember that Christ would come from this nation. Although it was perpetual, there is still, and this is somewhat of a paradox I stated, there is still within this beautiful plea, this gracious plea, a snare that many of the nation of Israel fell to. They had in front of them the most powerful being that we can perceive and conceive. And so they had all of this providence and all of these blessings and all of these things that went before them. But at the same time, it's easy to take advantage of such blessings. And so it was often the case that some of them would fall during this journey that they had, during this journey. And you know, there was a remnant of this nation of Israel that would be saved. I often thought about how and why the prophet would speak about a remnant. A remnant will be saved. And what did that mean to many of those who were living at that time? What did that mean to those who would not survive, but that this remnant would be saved? And this remnant didn't necessarily have anything to do with them at that time. So if somebody gave you some good news, but it didn't really have anything to do with you, then how is that good news? A remnant shall be saved. Well, we understand and know. Jesus Christ would come forth, and he would shed that blood, and that blood would go back and cover many of the sins of those in times past. So then in that sense, they would be victorious. So then the prophet stated their victory as if it were the case right then and there. A remnant shall be saved. You can look forward to that. Paul states, though the number of the children of Israel be as the sands of the sea, a remnant shall be saved. Romans 9:27. In context of Hosea, we find that they would be blessed, and blessed in a specific way. Here, much imagery is being used that refers to those who would be saved, that remnant. Haley says, they, those who dwell under the shadow and influence of the new Israel, will be so influenced by him that they will be caused to live and bear fruit also. I'm talking about verse 7. They that dwell under his shadow shall return. They shall revive as the corn and grow as the vine. The scent thereof shall be as the wine of Lebanon. Ephraim shall say, what have I to do with any more idols? I have heard him and observed him. I am like a green fir tree. From me is thy fruit found. They is limited to the very subjects who are willing to do as instructed. On the other hand, we find in the 9th verse, who is wise and he shall understand these things, prudent, and he shall know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the just shall walk in them, but the transgressors shall fall therein. The transgressors shall fall therein. Remember that this is being stated to those who had been given divine favor, the children of God, this chosen nation. And it says here that the transgressor shall fall therein. And what is it referring to when it says therein? Paul notes the position of the Israelites, referring to them as the children of promise. He says in Romans 9, 4 and 5, who are Israelites, to whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises, whose are the fathers, and of whom, as concerning the flesh, Christ came, who is over all, God blessed forever. Amen. Here they are given divine favor. But still there is the possibility of peril. There's the possibility that they could fall, even within this perpetual plea of God. And it's often the case that we take for granted or take advantage of the grace of God. The epistles speak much about many who have failed of the grace of God in Hebrews 12 and 15. Take note of those in times past so that none of you fail of the grace of God, he says. Jeremiah, he used the phrase perpetual backsliding, referring to this nation of Israel, where they were moving backwards instead of forwards, even in the divine favor that they had received. He presents to them a large discrepancy provided in Jeremiah chapter 8 and verse 7, where he says that they, being more intelligent than animals, still could not know and understand the things that they ought to, presents to them a large discrepancy. To understand why God would do this, why God would continually call his people back to him, we know it because of who God is, and not necessarily because of something that we have done. Return unto the Lord is a permanent promise. And I believe that the majority would suppose that a perpetual plea and a permanent promise would produce perseverance. As I said, in many cases, it has produced the opposite. The Hebrew writer, in chapter 6, he encourages the saints to follow Abraham, he says, who through patience obtained the promise. Follow Abraham, who through patience obtained the promise. Now, there's something very important here that we find in Hebrews, because when we're looking at Hebrews, we're looking at this that had been written to those, the very persons who would be saved, who had been saved by this remnant that had come or that had survived. Encouragement was given to them by setting forth the divine attribute limited to God himself, the fact that it is impossible for God to lie. In Hebrews 6, verses 16 through 20, the Hebrew writer writes, "For men verily swear by the greater, and an oath for confirmation is to them an end of all strife, wherein God, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us, which hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which entereth into that within the veil, whither the forerunner is for us entered, even Jesus, made an high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. The promises made to Abraham, they came to pass. We find that in Galatians 3, 7 and 8. The promises made to Abraham came to pass. In thee shall all nations of the earth be blessed. And so he says, seeing this and noting that very fact, we can take strong consolation in the fact that the promises given to us, they will surely come to pass. The immutability of his counsel, the immutability of God, is shown in his perpetual plea to the nation of Israel there in Hosea, that he's still continually calling them. Why? Because it's impossible for him to lie. He made the promise to Abraham, to Abram, and that promise would come to pass. Moses, I'll make of thee a great nation. No, can't do that. God knew that, and he didn't. That promise came to pass. And he says you can take strong consolation in the fact that it did. And not only that, but whatever promises that are made to you, you can certainly rely on the fact that they will come to pass. It's an anchor of the soul. An anchor of the soul. So here are the very persons who have survived, who had survived through the wilderness, survived nations rising against nation, had survived the wrath of God even. The Hebrew writer says that many of them fell in the wilderness. Here they are. And the Hebrew writer is speaking to them. And he's showing them the immutability of God's counsel. The imagery set forth in Hosea is one that provides for them at that time reassurance in the ability of God, reassurance in his promise, reassurance in his grace and in his love towards that particular nation. And also, it also set forth the love of God as it pertains to every human that would come into existence. Christ would come into the world and he would die. And that blood would cover those under the First Testament as well as the Second. And that was the message of victory. A remnant shall be saved. To avoid this snare of grace, and here may be the crux of today's lecture. To avoid this snare of grace, we're encouraged to show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope unto the end, as characteristic of our forefathers. Show the same diligence. Hebrews 11 and 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Showing the same diligence. One of the things that makes it easier to do that, one of the things, as it says, that can anchor our soul, is our belief and our understanding of the fact of the immutable counsel of God. The promise has been made, and we must believe that promise, Hebrews 11 and 6, that God is able to sustain our lives, that he's able to save us in the end. And that's one of the bedrocks of our faith, is the immutability of the counsel of God. He will not change, and he has not lied, and he will not lie. And so we can continue on. We can give more of ourselves. We don't stand vulnerable, in a sense, as with other relationships. There's no need for it. There's no need to be afraid or timid towards God. We come boldly before the throne of grace to ask for help in time of need. All of these things we can do because of the immutability of God. He changes not. He will not lie, and he has not lied. So then, the ups and downs of this nation of Israel. The ups and downs, but yet they still survive. Christ comes into being. And as I said, it didn't happen at the beginning of creation, but it happened a long time after. And so, that which was in the mind of God did not change. That same concept of Jesus Christ coming into the world to die for the sins of the world, it did not change. So, this thing had to play out on a human platform over centuries of time, nations rising and falling. And he could not annihilate his people. He could not because of the ultimate plan. If one man came into existence, Adam, if one man came into existence and sinned, God would not abandon his plan. One man. Because it was in his mind before the world began, we understand the determinate counsel, predetermined. So then we understand that the law was a schoolmaster. This thing brought us to Christ. We understand that all the things that we know, those things that were afore, were written for our learning, Romans 15 and 4. So we can look back and see and learn from the mistakes that they did in the past. We talk about an anchor of the soul now. An anchor of the soul now. And this is, now this hit me like a ton of bricks. Just statement. And of course, like I said, I'm sure some of you have had this thought maybe many times over. As my youth. This problem of sin was so deep and serious that it literally took history to fix. Without God interrupting our free moral agency, it took history to fix this. Not a zap, not on command, not it be spoken, but it took history. Note, early on, the people of God, they were told to remember. Remember this, remember that, remember how they fell. Remember, in order for mankind to even respect and revere God for who he was and his power and his ability, it took history. Man actually had to look back on previous behaviors and see and note how God dealt with man and then seek to conform or obey whatever the particular rule may have been. Even coming down to our time, it's still hard for many of us to even revere and respect God as God. Even after all of these nations and people and mistakes and problems have come into being, it's still problematic for us to conform to the image of his son. It took us to be able to look back on those who came before us to really realize and respect and revere the power of God. This perpetual plea, it was necessary. It was indispensable because God would not interrupt our free moral agency. He knew that it would take previous scenarios and events for us to look and revere and respect him as God. So then this perpetual plea continues. It continues. And every generation, they can look back on what happened in times past and seek to do different than they may have done in the past. If you don't want to fall, as it says, 23 fell in the wilderness, then it says, all of you, show the same diligence. Be sure that none of you fail of the grace of God as they did in times past. We find much of this in the Hebrews, where he's speaking about those same persons who had been given divine favor by God, yet they fell. Our hope is in Christ. Our hope is in Christ. And as we look back retrospectively, being on this time side of the cross, we've seen the plan unfold. We're thankful that a remnant survived. More importantly, we're thankful that God is who he is, and that all that he has said, because of these scenarios and events that we read of in the past, all that he has said will come to pass. All of the promises that he has given, he will fulfill. That's our anchor of the soul. In closing, I'd like to say a few things. I used to be so impressed, and don't get me wrong, I admire and respect deeply the actions, the behaviors, the efforts of men. So much more impressed, perhaps, than I should have been. It's often the case that even ministers and elders, perhaps, are held on a pedestal. And yes, esteem them highly for their work's sake. And this we do, hopefully. I used to be so impressed with what men do and what they've done in the past. But the more I think about it, the only reason we have survived is through the nature and the immutability of God, who he was, the plan he had in his mind before the world began, his nature, his being, and his love for this creation is the reason we are here today, is the reason that I'm here today. Take no respect away from the fact that much of my formal training came from the school. Take no respect away from the dynamic professors and preachers that are even in the audience. I respect deeply those who have done the work here and all over the world. But my respect for God, as I was preparing this lesson, has grown. My respect for him and what he has done has made it all possible. And sometimes that can be overlooked. We stand in a position of advantage. We even have what we call the truth, the gospel. We have the truth. And how shameful, or how should I say, unlucky, unfortunate it would be for someone to fall from this position of advantage, because we can look back and we see all the error, so that we can conform ourselves better to the image of Christ. Return unto the Lord. Night and day speaks. The elements speak at this very moment. And still that plea is still being projected forth. Return unto the Lord. And it will be to the ends of the earth. I want to thank you once again. It's unfortunate that I had to speak at this time frame because I had to keep myself from falling over. I just want to thank you once again. Why I was here to do this has nothing to do with speaking ability or anything like that. You can be assured of that. I just appreciate just the fact that I was asked to do this, and it's just been a great experience for me, and I was actually surprised. I just want to say once again, just to the elders here and to this congregation, that you've had much to do with the shaping of my life. My wife, son, they feel the same way. I can't tell you what you've done. Like I say, as far as contact, perhaps we don't speak that often. But if you're like me, and I'm sure there's, you know, a multiplicity of personalities, one of my downfalls is keeping contact with people as often as I should. That's one of my downfalls. And so if there's anybody out there who can relate, you know, that's what's going on. But it doesn't mean, and I know you feel this way too, that you're not in my heart and in my thoughts much of the time, constantly. I think about you very much. Especially when I run into situations and problems, I think about the school of preaching and all the things that they did not teach me. No. I love you very much, and I just want to thank you for your time. Thank you.